Broadcasting from the studios of Business Radio X, it's time for Privacy Cafe. This show is brought to you by Hall Booth Smith, guiding clients through the intricate landscape of data privacy law. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to another episode of Privacy Cafe. We are your hosts, Jade Davis and Rich Shanus. Today, we are delighted to have Rachel Stuve with us. She is the Senior Director of Data Science and Artificial Intelligence at Elevance Health, formerly known as Anthem. Her perspectives and wisdom shared today is not a reflection of Elevance, but her own. Thank you for allowing us to pick your brain today, Rachel. Let's get started and tell us a little bit about yourself and how you ended at Elevance.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. It's always an honor to come and share my passions and my insights. I've had a long career in data science. I went to school for it, and it most definitely was not called AI or data science at the time. And started my way as programming, database engineer, and then have worked up through my career on strategy, data culture, and really implementing from a business competitive advantage, AI and data science projects. I've had experience in law enforcement, where I've literally actually worked in a jail, which was very interesting, and then moved to healthcare for a good part of my career as well, and then some software sales. And really why I ended up in healthcare and why I'm really passionate about it is I think it is an industry that really is prime for technology and AI, because there is a rare industry that truly is so altruistic as healthcare. And that's something that just really aligns with my passions.
That's great. So some of our users are very sophisticated. Some may consider themselves expert on AI as you are. But for users who are not, how would you explain artificial intelligence as a layperson may see it and then as you work with it today?
Yeah, I consider it really an umbrella of a technology study that applies various types of technology to solve problems, be it business or even at times personal problems. So think of it as an umbrella. And then underneath it are a lot of different types of technology where we may look at computer vision, which is a very visual type of technology, or we look at data science. And AI is a branch under that. For me, I classify that as really taking large amounts of data and looking for patterns that may not typically be visible to a human, but a machine can go through that. And finding those patterns and using those patterns to highlight anomalies or make future predictions. So for me, AI fundamentally is really a pattern recognition and then an action based out of that.
That's
Rachel,
interesting.
In the healthcare field, how is that making a change? What we're used to having various software programs and algorithms. So how are we making the leap, and what is AI doing that we did not have before?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's a lot of areas where AI is really making a difference in healthcare. So I'd say the first area that is a little bit more mature is automated operational efficiencies. So when you think of the complexity of healthcare, be it a healthcare claim or a pharmaceutical, how many pharmaceutical interactions or different types of chemistry, or just even all the doctors or facilities that someone may see in a year or visit. So that's a lot of data. It's very disparate. It can be in lots of different formats. So AI in healthcare, first application was really that operational automation, where can we process complex claims automatically? Can we find missing data? For example, a great use case for AI is finding claims that come in with missing data that may have previously been denied, but then going out to various different data sources in the ecosystem and finding the data to supplement those claims or correct that missing data, which then subsequently will make that claim be approved and fully adjudicated. Where I see AI going in healthcare, where a lot of organizations, be it large, as well as I do a lot with startups, is that personalization and kind of consumer-driven healthcare, where historically healthcare has been pay-for-service and very driven by large organizations such as insurers or large provider organizations, where what AI is doing now is really helping to create healthcare as a consumer-driven industry, where AI can have personalization of what are the best plans to manage chronic diseases? What are some resources that you may need? What are reminders or, hey, this provider in your area could help you with this particular issue? Price shopping is also an area that AI is really helping with consumer side. So it's really democratizing that and putting it in the hands of people and taking large amounts of complex data and simplifying it for consumers.
How are you presenting that to consumers so that they can take advantage of it?
That's a good question. So some of it is incentive driven, where there are financial incentives for consumers to leverage these types of resources or these tools to drive better outcomes. Some of it is also customization and outreach. So there are algorithms that have been looking at that identify not just the best care plans for members, but what is the best way to communicate with them that would be the most successful. So maybe I will respond well to texting, but another member may respond to phone calls. Or maybe even someone like Jade, we need to reach out to her caretaker. So aside from the incentives, making it very personal and very easy is driving more engagement.
One of the things that we see, Rachel, in this field is always having to deal with HIPAA. Mm-hmm. And HIPAA has been around for a while now. It's almost 30 years. The first part of HIPAA, the privacy rule, came out became effective in 1996. And HIPAA is the prominent role of HIPAA, I would say, is maintaining privacy. And for AI to work, it seems that you need vast amounts of data for the program to learn, machine learning, and to identify the types of patterns that you're talking about. Do the HIPAA regulations inhibit the advancement of AI and its use in the healthcare field?
Yeah, I haven't seen the type of regulation necessarily prohibit innovation or slow it down as much as highlight the need for an organization-wide data strategy. So very typically, and you have a good point about HIPAA, there already is a lot of security around data, and it's provisioned only to people that need that data in the course of their job. And the same goes for AI as the ultimate end users of a particular output. That data will still be denormalized or masked or not accessible based on those HIPAA rules. So highlighting very much that having a governance policy, which a lot of healthcare organizations already do, has slowed it down. Where one of the things that I've seen to be most successful, though, is to create, in conjunction with the business, a robust business-based audit plan and governance, where I think sometimes there's this mentality that we're going to build a model and throw it in production and set it and forget it. Where with the nature of AI, as it's constantly ingesting more information and really evolving, it's very critical to have a very regular audit process to make sure that the models aren't ingesting information they shouldn't, that they're still true to their fundamental value, and that they're not perpetuating biases. So one of the things that I've done with my team is really look at the performance of the models and what the main features are, the main inputs, and then look to see if there could potentially be any biases in that. And if so, take those out and run the models and compare the performance. So I think it's a little bit more intentional of development, but if an organization has a solid data governance, I think that can still drive a lot of innovation.
One question that came to my mind when we were talking about personalization and getting to the consumer-driven healthcare model, which I find very interesting. Hospitality is certainly going there more and more, especially after COVID, really taking advantage of data and analytics. But how do you do it from the standpoint in healthcare? What trends are you seeing? Because often there's a multifaceted care team for a patient. There's providers, caretakers, skilled nursing, pharmacists, and the list goes on and on. How do you see these players communicating and sharing data to achieve the same or better outcomes? Years ago, it was just e-faxing from EMR to EMR. Right. Once high tech required that. Do you see any sort of interplay now or any trends or anything you can think about for the future to come?
Yeah, absolutely. So with the prevalence of AI, one of the big projects I worked on was a comprehensive care platform where it was a platform that, Jade, to your point, linked a lot of various different providers. So it provided a central location for member view. And what AI was really an advantage there was automating workflows based on provider notes and then moving that patient to another type of provider or partner within that platform in that network. For example, if I was talking with a case manager and I mentioned that I had missed a doctor's appointment because I didn't have transportation, what the AI would do was then create a workflow to route my case to a transportation partner. So, you know, something like Uber or local transportation. And then that company could, or that partner could reach out to me, or as a member on that interface, I can now go and click a button and say, I need a ride to my next doctor's appointment. So I think developing that kind of comprehensive platform that connects and can workflow members through the provider network has helped to reduce their members kind of drop out or between the lines.
So how do you manage privacy issues? So obviously, I'm sure you have vendor agreements where you're ensuring that data is protected. And under healthcare, obviously, they would be a business associate. So you'd have those agreements. Is the information only coming, you think, from a centralized platform? It's going out, meaning you're not getting information from the other entity? or is it a two-way?
It is two-way. There is a lot of de-identification that happens, as well as very specific data sharing agreements and only sharing minimally necessary data. And a lot of these programs are also member opt-in. So members do have to opt into that, where the initial outreach is more of the nature, hey, we see that we have this program that may have value. Would you like to opt in? So there are those agreements as well. And at any point, a member can opt out of that. Mm-hmm. But a lot of that is handled in the backend infrastructure, where we are making sure minimally necessary. There is also infrastructure considerations for copying data in a separate location, so that one, only what's needed goes to that separate location. But there's also a physical barrier or delineation between the larger data set, which also helps mitigate and reduce risk.
Thank you. That's a very good point. I think people are doing a portion of what's required to achieve that efficiency in communication, but they're not going the extra route to segregate information. And that's where we really should be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rachel, one of the things that we're concerned about is quality control or quality management, so that when you're getting your deliverable from the AI program, it's reliable. In the legal field, we've all heard about an incident several months ago. An attorney had an AI program write a brief. The attorney submitted the brief to the court without checking it, and the court found that cases cited in the brief were just created out of thin air. Needless to say, that attorney was in some hot water with the court. But in the healthcare field and what you use AI for, how do you approach the quality control or quality management aspect?
Yeah, I heard about that. Actually, I was chatting about that with a friend recently. There's a couple areas. First of all, it highlights the need for an audit and governance program. And I cannot stress enough how important it is that occur not just within IT or your development shop, but in conjunction with the business of, is the model performing better or similar to humans? Is the model still making the same decisions that were the original intention 6 months, 12 months, 18 months into its production? So there very much is that need for audit and governance, so that as models slowly drift, that you can catch that before it becomes a really big problem. Where if you can see small tuning opportunities and you can proactively do that, it reduces the risk that a model is going to have some egregious decision, or the fact if there is, that is highlighted. One of the really interesting areas, I think, of AI is in that type of detection and security, where there are AI models that I've built that are specifically to detect anomalies and highlight those anomalies, or some sort of summarization pattern within usage logs. And that one can help proactively or identify potential attacks, but it also can look at, you know, potential areas for misuse. I think also having a review and kind of leadership policy helps. A lot of organizations will use AI right now in healthcare to augment decisions, but the human still has to sign off or review that. So fundamentally, there is still a human that is responsible to say, yes, this is accurate.
Well, following up on what you just said regarding the AI augmenting the human decision. Again, as lawyers, we go back to helping our clients manage risk. How does that fit in with when there might be, say, an adverse outcome and the care provider says, I relied on or augmented by what the AI program told me, and where does liability lie? Is that an issue that has come up or something that you anticipate and determine how you will handle it or what the process would be should it come up in an actual case?
Yeah, I think AI and ethics is a really gaining some traction and starting organizations, especially in healthcare, are starting to really say, yes, we need to have an ethical policy in place. And just because we can do something with technology doesn't mean we should. I read an article by IBM recently that 4 out of 5 executives don't trust AI. And so they're very hesitant to really leverage it in all of the areas that it could be useful. And so I think having one of the reasons or one of the ways to get over that is have an ethics policy to say, we've thought about it and here's how we're going to audit it. And here's the sign-off process. And here's how we are technologically speaking, how we're training our models and how we're benchmarking them. I have guided my team through very robust audits and very robust documentation that the ultimate outcome is we are very confident that there is not bias. We're very confident it meets these goals. We're very confident in the oversight. And here's all the processes, all the people involved in that. And I think that is the way that we as technologists can build trust so that people know where the AI works and where they may be able to need to augment them. So in this legal example, I know that AI is really great at doing briefs, but I also need to check. I know I need to check all the citations.
One question that I thought about when we were talking about predictive analytics was one of your use examples, but we have a lot of clients who really are excited about AI. They're using it in several different ways. But I think that when you have a program that you've established and you understand what outcomes you're getting, you have to actually back up to make sure you've asked the right questions so that your outcomes align with your goals. For a company that hasn't implemented AI or really hasn't given the right thought process to it, what would you recommend as questions to ask before they conduct predictive analytics?
Yeah. Oh, that's a great question. I think really understanding what the business goals are is the first question to ask. So what are our objectives? What is the mission? What are the, regardless of technology, what are the areas that we want to grow? I think that's critical. For new organizations, leveraging AI to automate the monotonous or repetitive tasks that humans do is the place that I always recommend to start, because those tend to be more supplemental. So you can build your data culture, get people used to it. You gain that operational efficiency, and it can really have some of those kind of quick wins so that people can start saying, oh, if I can automate this, let's move to predictive, kind of that growth phase. So I think that making sure that it starts with the business and not the IT department is really great question to ask. And then looking at small phased approaches. I'm a huge proponent. I tell my team all the time, everything doesn't all have to be in the first release. So we can do small releases that answer small questions, see how that performs, and then add into that.
One question I have too is about quantifying outcomes. I think that you have to make sure that those outcomes are quantifiable so you can communicate back to the business.
Absolutely.
How have you been able to do that, and where have you seen it go awry?
Yeah. So prior to starting projects, I have a process where we identify the use case, we identify the rough level of effort, and then we identify in conjunction with the business what success would look like. So is that a percentage of automation? Is it a certain type of prediction? Is it we're struggling with this process and a success would be adding something into that process or taking out? So defining ahead of the program what success looks like aligns the business and the IT teams to be very clear on what the goals are. So when you're a developer, is this feature going to contribute to that success metric if we're not going to put it in? From a business perspective, that has helped eliminate scope creep, or yeah, we like this tool, but it really doesn't do what we want it to. So I found that to be really successful. Where it goes awry is where I've found the most is when it's developed in a vacuum of, yes, we developed this AI and it solves this problem, but oops, there's a tool over here that already does that. So I think to also your earlier question, one of the questions and one of the design process is also, how does this fit into the ecosystem?
Rachel, it sounds, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you're developing your own algorithms and AI programs for the use cases or goals that you've identified. But for smaller healthcare providers that maybe don't have the money, the ability to develop their own AI programs, are there some alternatives as far as finding what is on the market, so to speak, and then being able to use those existing programs to still help the smaller providers leverage AI?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There's a lot of tools that are available to small companies. Some are free, some are paid. Microsoft has some really great tools that integrate into the Office suite. And for some small organizations, they're still using Excel. So leveraging those Microsoft tools is a really good way to integrate what you already have without building out a big system. And then leveraging some of those tools that Microsoft has already done some of the backend installations. There's a lot of other tools. There are some tools out there that can help with customization or marketing campaigns as well for small companies. There's actually something I think I heard, 1,000 new AI apps being developed every month. And that is definitely overwhelming. So I think there can be some limited trial and error. But for those smaller organizations, I definitely recommend kind of your big providers like your Microsoft or your Google, where it's already integrating most likely into what that organization would already have.
I'd like to end on a couple more examples for what trending for use, some use cases that you recommend. And hopefully we could do it from a small, medium to large enterprise.
Yeah, absolutely. I think from a small enterprise, I've seen a lot of trending in summarization or kind of customer interaction, things like chatbots that can be very easily integrated into an existing website or existing applications for a small business that can handle small types of requests that typically would be a lot more overhead for a small organization. So something like scheduling, or what hours are you open, or what's the contact information? Those kind of chatbots have I've seen a lot in smaller organizations. In the mid-size, especially in healthcare, a lot of the trending that I'm seeing, especially in the startup community, is identifying resources within the healthcare journey, care providers, childcare, nutrition, connecting with those different types of services or needs. I've seen a lot of that in that mid-market. In the larger enterprise, AI increasingly in customization and bringing together disparate data and really completing it and then leveraging that for risk mitigation and fraud detection.
Thank you so much for your time today, Rachel. We learned quite a bit. It's always exciting to dig into an expert's brain. You're doing some incredible things, really changing our ecosystem in healthcare as small, medium, and large businesses will see fit. You're really a change agent, and I just really admire your passion and how you're using your skills to make a difference. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thanks.
You bet.
Thank you for joining Privacy Cafe. We are happy to have you. You can find us on all major podcast apps. If you know someone that is interested in being a speaker, or if you have any questions, please email us at privacycafe@hallboothsmith.com. Thank you. See you next time.
Thank you for joining us on Privacy Cafe. This show was underwritten by Hall Booth Smith, helping clients navigate the ever-changing world of data privacy and cybersecurity. For more information, go to hallboothsmith.com.
Privacy Cafe is a production brought to you by Hall Booth Smith, PC. This podcast is published for the purpose of providing general information and education on topics, which includes those related to the law and legal issues. But the contents of the podcast do not constitute legal advice. Listening to this podcast or utilizing the information contained in it in any way does not constitute, nor does it create, an attorney-client relationship between you and Hall Booth Smith or its lawyers. The contents of this podcast should not be used as a substitute for competent legal advice from a professional attorney licensed in your jurisdiction.